The meal had taken up the whole of the round oak table by the fire. A thick steak of home-cured ham overlapping the plate, with two fresh eggs nestling on its bosom. A newly baked loaf with a knife sticking in it, a dish of farm butter, some jam, a vast pot of tea, and a whole Wensleydale cheese, circular, snow-white, about 18 inches high. I could remember eating unbelievingly for a long time, and finishing with slice after slice of the moist, delicately flavoured cheese. The entire meal had cost me half a crown. "Yes, Mr. Peacock, I have been here before, and if I'm ever starving on a desert island, I'll think of that wonderful meal you gave me." The landlord shrugged.
"Well, it was not much, sir. Just usual stuff."
But he looked pleased.
"Well, that's fine, then," Tristan said impatiently. "But we haven't come to eat, we've come for a drink, and Mr. Peacock keeps some of the finest draught magnet in Yorkshire. I'd welcome your opinion on it, Jim. Perhaps you would be kind enough to bring us 2 pints and 2 halves, Mr. Peacock."
I noticed there was no question of asking the girls what they would like to have, but they seemed quite happy with the arrangement. The landlord reappeared from the cellar, puffing slightly. He was carrying a tall, white enamel jug from which he poured a thin brown stream, varying the height expertly till he had produced a white, frothy head on each glass. Tristan raised his pint and looked at it with quiet reverence. He sniffed it carefully, and then took a sip which he retained in his mouth for a few seconds while his jaw moved rapidly up and down. After swallowing, he smacked his lips a few times with the utmost solemnity, then closed his eyes and took a deep gulp. He kept his eyes closed for a long time, and when he opened them, they were rapturous, as though he had seen a beautiful vision.
"Ah, it's an experience coming here," he whispered. "Keeping beer in the wood is a skillful business, but you, Mr. Peacock, are an artist."
The landlord inclined his head modestly, and Tristan, raising his glass in salute, drained it with an easy upward motion of the elbow. Little oohs of admiration came from the girls, but I saw that they, in their turn, had little difficulty in emptying their glasses. With an effort, I got my own pint down, and the enamel jug was immediately in action again. I was always at a disadvantage, in the company of a virtuoso like Tristan. But as the time passed and the landlord kept revisiting the cellar with his jug, it seemed to become easier. In fact, a long time later, as I drew confidently on my 8th pint, I wondered why I had ever had difficulty with large amounts of fluid. It was easy, and it soothed and comforted. Tristan was right. I had been needing this. It puzzled me that I hadn't realized until now that Connie was one of the most beautiful creatures I'd ever seen. Back there in the street outside the hospital, she had seemed attractive. But obviously the light had been bad, and I had failed to notice the perfection of her skin, the mysterious greenish depth of her eyes, and the wonderful hair catching lights of gold and deep red bronze from the flickering fire. And the laughing mouth, shining even teeth, and little pink tongue. She hardly ever stopped laughing, except to drink her beer. Everything I said was witty, brilliantly funny, in fact. And she looked at me all the time, peeping over the top of her glass in open admiration. It was profoundly reassuring. As the beer flowed, time slowed down, and finally lurched to a halt. And there was neither past nor future, only Connie's face and the warm, untroubled present. I was surprised when Tristan pulled at my arm. I had forgotten he was there. And when I focused on him, it was the same as with Connie. There was just the face, swimming disembodied in an empty room. Only this face was very red and puffy and glassy-eyed.
"Would you care for the mad conductor?"
the face said. I was deeply touched. Here was another sign of my friend's concern for me. Of all Tristan's repertoire, his imitation of a mad conductor was the most exacting. It involved tremendous expenditure of energy, and since Tristan was unused to any form of physical activity, it really took it out of him. Yet here he was, ready and willing to sacrifice himself. A wave of treacly sentiment flooded through me, and I wondered for a second if it might not be the proper thing to burst into tears, but instead I contented myself with wringing Tristan's hand.
"There's nothing I would like more, my dear old chap," I said thickly.